We are starting this morning with Senator Laurie, Senate File 1280. Welcome to the committee, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be back. Senate File 1280 is some cleanup work from a Cloquet Area Fire District that was created back in 2009. Actually, the district has been working quite well since then. It includes the city of Cloquet, the city of Scanlon, Perch Lake Township, and Fond du Lac Tribal Community are all working collectively to provide fire and ambulance services. The district is looking to have some cleanup work that was largely recommended by the Office of the Attorney General in order to start making the ambulance service work a little bit better. I hope that you have the revenue note that goes with this bill that demonstrates that this should be neutral across the board for all jurisdictions. Probably the last bullet on the first page is the most telling. It says that transferring services from a city to a special taxing district is assumed to provide a similar level of service at a similar tax levy amount, no assumed impact to the state general fund, and really it should be considered fairly technical cleanup language. The biggest piece is allowing a municipality that is not currently contiguous to the Cloquet Area Fire District to join the district with the support of that community and the existing district. So with that, I've got a couple of testifiers that can talk about the details. I know that this has the support of the Ambulance Association as well, if members are interested in that. I don't know who wishes to go first, but I have Kevin Schroeder, the district chief, Bob DeCaney, the district chairman, and Brian Fitzinger, the city administrator for the city of Cloquet. Probably Mr. Fitzinger will go first.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Fitzinger.
Thank you. Could I ask a question?
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Laurie, did you say there was no property tax impact here?
Senator Laurie.
Senator Rest, Mr. Chair, according to the Minnesota Revenue, there's no...
this is general fund dollars.
There's no general fund dollars. Let me have these guys talk about exactly how the levy for ambulance services within the existing primary service area needs to start... being able to be levied, which was initially intended in the 2009 legislation. And they were just getting started on working that out with the communities that are served by the primary service area. And the Attorney General said you really should seek some clarifying language to really make sure that that intent is expressed in the enabling legislation. And so working with the neighboring communities, I'm going to let these guys talk about exactly how it will roll out in all of the neighboring communities.
Mr. Chairman, that will be my question for them. Is there going to be, in the red area, is there going to be a property tax increase in order to serve this this area that they're not currently paying? And if there is, I'm surprised that there is no general fund impact with the interaction on the PTR.
And Senator Rest, perhaps members, when you're testifying, if you could address Senator Rest's question, but I think is if the district's expanding, there would have to be property tax impacts because you'll be bringing residents in. And if you could also address this non-contiguous portion and whether we have to put some limits on that.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, I'll try to address both of those as part of my brief testimony here. Again, thank you for – I'm Brian Fritzinger with the City of Cloquet, City Administrator. Thanks for having us down here today. again, not for those of you not familiar with us, City of Cloquet is located about 20 miles south of Duluth on I-35, considered a regional center for the area outside of Duluth. We have, as the City of Cloquet in the past, provided the primary – full-time ambulance service for this part of the region of Carlton County and as part of St. Louis County as well. As you know, those areas are dictated to us by the state EMSRB through the primary service area as to what we need to provide that service. That area is about 261 square miles in size that we provide the ambulance protection to. In the early 2000s, we started working as Northeastern Carleton County, trying to look at different ways as the state budget was changing and some of the issues, trying to figure out how we could provide a better level of service, and took a real hard look at how we provided the fire and ambulance components of what we do. Most important at that time, obviously, was trying to figure out how to get rid of some of the redundancies and look at how we could cooperate better between the various agencies in our region. And in 2008 was the first step in that process, where the City of Cloquet and Perch Lake entered a joint powers agreement, consolidating our departments into both a full-time and a part-time paid-on-call department. Following that JPA, we came down here and we spoke with the legislature and pursued the legislation that actually formed the Cloquet Area Fire District. At that time, we were the first, and I believe, to the best of our knowledge, we're still the only fire and ambulance taxing district in the state. We knew at that time that we needed to try to work on ways to broaden the system, broaden how we provided the service, et cetera, for everybody who's actually receiving the benefit from that. At that time, the City of Cloquet had the full burden of that 261-mile area that we were providing the service, and we were trying to work with everybody to come up with that. At that time, Senator Bach was very proactive with Senator Lori, trying to help us craft the language that is in place that the legislation that was finally approved represents. And there was a number of amendments to that to address both this taxing issue as well as the membership issue. And at that time, the contiguous language was added to the bill to try to make sure that we could have those folks join that were adjacent to it. What we're finding at this point on the contiguous issue is that we have a number of townships in that whole area of our region that have tried to talk with the district about becoming members. The problem is they're kind of leapfrogged out a township or two, running their own volunteer departments and struggling from that standpoint. Unfortunately, we can't pursue any in-depth conversations with them because of the contiguous language that we have in our legislation. And so by trying to get that amended, it would allow some of those other outlying townships that aren't adjacent to the three members right now to be part of the system. We did, as part of our original legislation, also have language in there that allowed us to cooperate with the Fond du Lac tribal community. Again, in one of the unique aspects of this, they've not become members, but they are a full-time contract member under that context of what we do. And we actually provide fire protection to the full reservation, very large area outside of our otherwise fire service region that we have. Our language initially in our legislation was not intended to force people to become part of the district, but again, to continue the cooperative relationships that we could develop to try to put the district together and share in some of the benefits that we have from that. When you talk about the question regarding the taxation component, currently the district levies a tax within the current boundaries of the three communities that are members of the district. And so there's a portion of the general operations that are levied. The district does not levy 100% of the cost. They simply levy that difference at this point between balancing the books and operations that they need to have. Expanding the language here that we talk about, it's not an intent to in any way increase the total amount of any taxation or levy that would be put within the area, but again, shifting the levy, spreading it out amongst those that are actually receiving the benefit from the service that we have or receiving the service that they get in their communities. So it's not a situation where we're looking to broaden that out in any sense and adding more tax to the system. The original legislation did put some caps. At that time, I think it was Senator Bach that actually worked the numbers that kind of cap how we go about doing that with some reasonable increases that would be allowed over time. So not a situation where I think at this point we're levying anywhere near what the legislation allows us to do. It's actually a small component of what we have there. So I think, again, with that, hopefully kind of addressing the two questions that you had, I would end with that.
Senator Rest.
Thank you. And I do see now in the detail that, and I would just ask you to verify that, that it is who would be providing, or the way in which the service that's currently offered would be paid for, as opposed to it being in either a chargeback to the individual cities for a service. I noticed the first responders or something, or that they would have that, or some other service that would be charged to the city, and of course at that point would have to become part of you know what they levy for, and they will no longer have to, they will no longer be charged individually for services that they receive, because everybody in the area will be paying the same same tax, and so there's no chargeback. So that's why it ends up being property tax neutral. Would that be the claim?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ress. Yes, the way the system would work, and Chief Schroeder can talk a little bit more about it. But basically, there's right now certain non-members contribute dollars to the district out of their operating budget. And this would, again, eliminate that. Other parts of the district that we're providing the ambulance service to, we actually charge a higher fee for the calls that we do within those areas. So the residents are picking up a higher burden on a direct fee basis.
And they would have to do that.
And that would be shift change back to the regular fee that we charge for the rest. And
thank you. Appreciate it.
Sheriff, Chief Schroeder.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I'm Kevin Schroeder. I'm the District Fire Chief for the Cook Area Fire District. We've been in existence, as you've heard, for operating roughly 4 years. We've been extremely successful. We merged three communities with different levels of fire protection. We combined full-time, we combined volunteer into one comprehensive service provider that's actually providing better service than the individual components were. We've reduced a number of redundancies in equipment and different administrations. Our district training officer was just named Training Officer of the Year for Minnesota by the Fire Instructor and Training Officers Association of Minnesota. We've also received, through the University of Minnesota Humphrey School of Public Affairs, we were presented an award in local government innovation. And under our recent insurance services organization review on the capabilities we possess, we were reduced up to two categories in some of our places in our fire protection category. And in that system, going down is good. The ISO change results in potential direct savings to every property owner in our district through savings on their property insurance. So our success is beginning to show. It's also that success that's got us here today to clarify some items on membership and how we operate. In Subdivision 1 of Senate File 1280, we're looking at changing a number of ands to ors or both. There are jurisdictions that we have had discussions with that are interested in receiving either just fire service for us or are already receiving just ambulance service. The current language ties us back into providing both in a number of instances. With that, it moves into the second section of the file in front of you, which is our levy. Our initial enabling legislation in 2009 split the service into a special levy for fire and a separate levy for ambulance. It is part of that clarification as we move forward that the Attorney General strongly suggested we come back to you on, get a little better and more clear language on as we move forward. With those two pieces, we're hoping to continue the success we've had. We feel we've effectively restructured on how we provide a core government service in order to provide a better service in a more efficient and economical manner. And we look forward through some of these changes to expanding that into and working with other jurisdictions in our area.
And Senator Lori or Chief Schroeder or whoever it is, so when I look at this map, the blue and the red map, are you restricted by the outside boundary as to townships that you could be servicing that are not contiguous, or would you be moving outside of this area and providing service?
Did I take that?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the answer technically is both. On your map there, the red area is currently the area that we are providing both fire and ambulance service. The blue area is we are just providing ambulance service. There are areas outside of that area that we have been in discussions with that on the ambulance side, we are limited We cannot leave that boundary, the blue and red boundary. On the fire side, we can legally. And those are areas that are looking for just one service from us at the moment and discussing that topic.
Well, Senator Laurie.
And that, you know, there's confusion in the language because when it says fire and ambulance, which is why we're changing it to fire or ambulance or both, it's a little ambiguous as to whether they could exit that area to provide fire service outside of the primary service area for ambulance services. And that's why that's the reason for this clarification.
And Senator Laurie, is there any natural geographic boundary that this could be restricted to so we had some information as to where you might potentially go and put some boundary around it?
Well, I think there's going to be a natural boundary set just by physical limitations of how far you can get with your fire trucks and whatnot. And these communities that are providing volunteer services, maybe a township away, that could be better served by the full-time paid Sloquet Fire Department, you know, by the time you get, you know, 12 miles, it's probably not going to work anymore for those local communities, and they're not going to be interested. They're going to be looking very much at this ISO, the Insurance Service Organization, Public Protection Classification. I think the point that the chief made, that the latest community to join dropped 2 full points in their classification, saving these individuals money. As you get further away from the service, you're not going to get those benefits, and the communities aren't going to be interested in adding. And this is all voluntary based on the community stepping forward and saying, we'd like to be a part of this fire district. And so there's just a natural boundary set by just the geography and how long it takes a fire truck to arrive.
The reason I bring it up, Senator Laurie, is because there are other proposals for fire districts around the state, and one of the reasons that one of the communities wants to do it is because they want to build a fire station outside of their current city boundaries, and they can't. So I'm just trying to think down the road that maybe we should put some boundary around it, just so we have an idea, and we can talk about this later. We'll talk about it later. The other question I have, and I'm curious, do any of you gentlemen know how you're dealing with your non-taxable parcels, the public land? Are they paying into the fire service fee, or are they not?
Mr. Chair, right now there are no additional fees from any of the non-property tax-paying parcels within the district boundaries.
So if you had a government building or a non-tax non-profit that wouldn't be paying property tax, do they pay into the fee or do they not?
They do not.
They do not. Okay.
Mr. Chair, our original legislation limited it to a property tax formula.
Okay. Senator Russ.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Laurie, what is the scale here?
If you look at the little blue square off to the far right, that's a township. It's 6 miles by 6 miles.
So the
red piece is 2 6-by-6 squares, so 6 miles tall, 12 miles wide.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Generous. Mr. DeCagney, did you have anything you wanted to add? Okay. Any other questions, members? Anybody in the audience that wishes to testify in support or opposition to Senate File 1280? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Laurie. We'll lay this over for possible inclusion. Senate File 1280 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Senator Saxon. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Saxog, and representatives from Bemidji. Senate File 701.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I'm presenting Senate File 701. This bill would authorize the City of Bemidji to impose a 1% tax on local food, beverage, and lodging to help fund the operations of the new Sanford Event Center, thus allowing the city to provide some property tax relief for residents and businesses in the city. With me today is John Chatton, City Administrator for Bemidji, and there's a number of other testifiers, members of the City Council, who after Mr. Chatton goes, I'll let them introduce themselves. And I believe I believe Mr. McElroy from Lodging Minnesota will be giving some testimony too. So with that, I would turn it over to Mr. Chatton, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sendrum,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you're going to remind me that I have an A1 amendment.
Yeah, Senator Saxhog has an A1 amendment. Looks like, and this is your first stop, so this is an author's amendment.
It is.
Looks like he's just deleting some language. Senator Ress moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Saxhog.
So, with me today, Administrator John Chatton, City of Bemidji.
Mr. Chatton.
Chairman Skoy, Senators, thank you for having us here today. I think the first order of business would probably be to thank the Senate and the legislature for both the bonding money that was provided for our Sanford Center and for the extension of our half-cent sales tax, which has allowed us to pay some of the bonding for that center. And I know several of you were here when that legislation went through, so I thank you for that. The Sanford Center opened in October of 2010 on the south shore of Lake Bemidji, and we've hosted a variety of events there, everything from conventions and conferences to Blake Shelton and bull riding and monster trucks and just a whole host of different events. The only downside to the Sanford Center is that it requires a city subsidy. It's currently, last 2 years, it's run a deficit of slightly less than $400,000 per year. This is not unusual for a facility of this type, as I believe everyone in the state is running some deficit. And they're all provided for. Those deficits are covered in a variety of ways. I think our position is, though, that we have, I believe, we had over 123,000 people attend events at the conference center, convention conference center last year. And the city of Bemidji has 51% of our value in the city of Bemidji is tax exempt. It's one of the highest tax exempt ratios in the state. And what that does is that leaves 49% of the property in our city, which computes to just over 5,100 parcels, paying the entire deficit for a facility that hosts over 100,000 people a year. Now, considering that this facility is a regional asset and was awarded money by the legislature because of its value as a regional asset, the city would like to spread that burden in a more regional manner. And the way we see of doing that is for a 1% hospitality tax. It would apply to food and beverage and lodging. I think that if that tax were approved, it would generate about $500,000 for the event center, which would allow us to cover our deficit and also escrow some money for future future capital needs at the center. The other thing that it would also allow us to do is, obviously, if we don't have a $400,000 line item in our budget, our tax levy will be reduced by that $400,000. The way it currently sits, that would be over a 10% reduction in the city's property tax for the center and about 3.8% on overall property tax bill, which certainly is significant. Again, this is not a new concept. We have Detroit Lakes, Giants Ridge, Proctor, Duluth, Little Falls, Mankato, St. Cloud all have food and beverage taxes, and Rochester and St. Paul have an additional lodging tax over and above the tourism 3%. I believe that this bill is good for the city of Bemidji. It's good for our region, and our council is in unanimous support. We also have, as recently as yesterday, there was an editorial in our local paper, the Bemidji Pioneer, in full support of this hospitality tax. I'd be happy to provide copies if you would like them. And Visit Bemidji, our tourism wing for the city, has said that they will not either support or oppose on this hospitality tax, and met yesterday with chamber officials who also took the same position, because they have some in the city who oppose it and many who support it, so they are staying neutral also. So we don't have any opposition from either of those groups.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Chairman Skoy. Sir, if I can follow up on that, so your tourism folks are neutral. Did I hear that correctly?
That is correct, Senator.
Mr. Chair, I'm just a little bit surprised. I'm from Duluth, and our tourism folks are some of the strongest advocates for our hospitality tax, and because they know, and you started out with your comments, I think rightly so, saying none of these go unsubsidized. Ours doesn't either. It gets a significant portion of our tourism tax dollars, but our local tourism community realizes that the success of the convention center and all the activities that go on there, as you highlighted in yours, drive business for them as well. It fills hotel rooms. It puts people in seats in the restaurants. So a little surprised they're not more supportive than neutral. But.
Well, Mr. Chapman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, our Visit Bemidji tourism deals not only with promoting the city of Bemidji, but it deals a lot with those in the lodging business. And there are several in the lodging business that have been extremely vocal, one of whom you'll be hearing from a little later, in opposition to it. And I think they've been reluctant to come out in support of it because of that. So they've decided that their job is to promote Bemidji, so their board voted to take a neutral position on this and not take a political position.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Are you finished with your testimony, Mr. Chapman?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I would like to introduce two of our city council members. I have the longest-serving city council member, Ron Johnson, over here, and our shortest-serving city council member, Michael Mealhouse, to my right. And I don't know which of you gentlemen would like to make comments first.
Mr. Johnson.
Chairman Skoy, members of the committee, thanks for letting us be here today. And like our city manager said, I've been on the council. I'm in my 13th year. And prior to getting on the council, I was also spent 4 years on a committee looking to build the Sanford Center. And we made a lot of visits down to Rochester, over to Mankato, Duluth, Grand Forks, and Fargo. And we studied it. We studied it for 7, 8 years, 10 years. Before we could get this thing off the ground. One of the things we did notice, because we did marketing studies, we understood that if you wanted to have a true convention center and an event center, you're probably going to have to accept the fact that it's going to have some sort of subsidy besides what the building takes in. One of those the reasons convention centers don't make money is because conventions are very highly competitive, and oftentimes event centers make pretty good on events, conferences and conventions, which is what really brings people to town for multiple days and fills hotel rooms and fills restaurants. Oftentimes, you have to be pretty competitive there, and they're not exactly the best for the bottom line of the operating of the event center. But when we did look at the subsidy, we did realize that Mankato got in before the sales tax couldn't fund operations also. But we were told early on that you could only use the half-cent sales tax to build it, but there were tools, once we got it up and running and recognized how it was going to run, that we could go after. And the hospitality tax was something that was told that we could be looking at, and we were very upfront that this is something that we would probably be looking at once we had a couple of years under our belt and understood what it was going to take to do that. As you can imagine, this has been a pretty controversial subject. It's been in our papers and on our television stations and radio stations, and being my constituents, 100% of the people who have called me are supportive of this, and those are chamber members, and those are chamber members who are in the hospitality tax hospitality industry. One of the things that I think is important, it's very important that the local paper endorsed it. It's very important that the Visit Bemidji, our Innkeepers Association, and the Chamber have now taken a neutral stand and will not oppose it. One of the recent comments I've been receiving from our Chamber members is that they really would like to see both the lodging and the hospitality, food and beverage, both be involved. Obviously, we're asking for up to 1%. I think the council makes a decision on whether it's going to be. I mean, we could have anywhere from a half a cent to a full percent. Certainly, if we eliminate a significant part of this with the innkeepers, it's going to put that much more pressure on the remaining pool of food and beverage. So I think that we're seeing a lot more of the city unifying behind this and understanding this is very important. If we want to continue to have an event center that's going to be very profitable for the region and one that we can maintain being the – it's one of the finest event centers you're going to be in, and we want to keep it that way. And operation and maintenance is very important, and we want to be current, and we want to make it the best and the finest facility for years to come. So this is very important. And thanks for hearing us.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Mealhouse.
Chair and Senators, again, I'm Michael Mealhouse. I'm the youngest Bemidji City Councilor potentially ever. No one can confirm it, so it's kind of funny there. Ron talked a little bit about the history of this event center. Actually, I was a freshman at Bemidji State University when they were doing the final push to get the bonding money to get this event center built. In fact, that was one of the things that really got me involved in both our student government and our in the community at large, is I came down to St. Paul to help lobby on behalf of getting this event center built. So it really was a community effort. There were a lot of groups working together to make this happen. Again, Ron talked about a lot of the history behind it. It's a home to number of it's hosted a number of events, anything from country concerts to very popular 80s cover band. It's a home to Bemidji State University men's and women's hockey, so it's definitely a regional center. It brings on a lot of people to the city. A few of the things I want to highlight is, again, right now, because of it is operating at a deficit, it's about a $400,000 line item in our city budget. And so this would be an opportunity to take that out and lower people's property taxes. As of right now, we are slightly above the state average when it comes to property taxes, but again, it's an issue of – we look at it as an issue of fairness. We have roughly 5,100 people who are paying for a regional event center that over 100,000 people have been using every year that since it's been built. And then and some of this additional revenue we would be able to put aside for future capital needs at the center. Already we do have one improvement project that the City Council approved just a few weeks ago on the convention center side. And – of course, it will always be future projects. Eventually, you're going to need to do upkeep. Carpet will need to be replaced. Wiring will need to be redone. And also, of course, that brand-new feeling that the event center still has. It's not going to last forever, so we want to be able to keep money aside to keep the upkeep and keep it feeling new as possible. So I think Ron and John hit a lot on it, so I'll leave it at that.
So Mr. Chapman, what is the current lodging tax in Bemidji?
The current lodging tax is the 3% that's allowed by statute for tourism.
Thank you. And how much do you – I'm sure you said this, but I didn't write it down. Could you remind me how much money the food and beverage tax is estimated to raise, and what's the lodging tax estimated to raise?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, our estimates are that food and beverage would raise approximately 80% of the – amount, and lodging would raise approximately 20%.
And what's the total?
In this case, about $400,000 from food and beverage and $100,000 from lodging.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? Senator Rest.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Saxog, your witnesses talk about having the if this was imposed, it would have the opportunity to lower property taxes. What assurances do the taxpayers in Bemidji have that that actually would occur? Has there been a resolution passed that if this bill passed, city council would reduce property taxes by the amount of money that the food and lodging tax raises?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I would look to one of the counselors to answer that question.
Mr. Johnson.
Chairman Scoia, Senator Rest, and committee, it would immediately reduce taxes $400,000 from our general fund because that's what the line item is in there right now. So we that's one of the things that the my constituents are recognizing right away. They feel that that line item would make a significant impact on their taxes.
Mr. Chairman, sir, it would just eliminate the expense, not the levy. I mean, you'd have to promise to reduce the levy that $400,000 represented. What assurances do your taxpayers have that you're going to do that?
Senator Rest, Chairman Scoia.
Mr. Johnson.
We're actually having a budget meeting. I think it's our next work session.
Maybe we should talk about that.
And so, naturally, our levy could easily be reduced by that $400,000. It would be. Whether or not there's other things that are in our budget that are going to naturally raise it, that would yet to be seen by our council. However, whatever we raised, it would still be $400,000 less than we would have. But I could defer to my city manager as far as how that looks, because we haven't seen a sneak preview of next year's budget yet.
Mr. Chapman, did you have something you wanted to add?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, we would be happy to formalize that at our next meeting if that is something that this committee would like to see.
I was just curious.
Because the entire council has reviewed these tax points and agrees with them. I think where the rub comes in is for us to say, I guarantee you we're going to reduce our levy by 10.3%, and yet there are other expenses in the city that drive up the levy 2%, mm-hmm. then we're not going to be able to do that. I think what we are saying is that we would guarantee that our levy would be reduced by $400,000 over what it would otherwise have to be if we included this in the. We have no other plans for that money.
And Mr. Chapman, when this was originally being discussed, and I think maybe this should be Mr. Johnson, that you did talk about this, the city knew that you were going to be operating in a deficit as the plans were being presented for the original Sanford Center?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Senators, we did know it was going to be at a deficit. It's actually running a lower deficit than what was originally projected during the first 5 years. Long term, we were hoping that we could get the deficit down to around $250,000. There are those who believe we can get it down even lower than that, and believe me, we hope that we can, but we still need a funding source to maintain that. Obviously, if we had come to the legislature at that time and said, you know, we'd like $23 million in bonding money for this facility, and we'd like to extend our half-cent sales tax, and we'd like to have a hospitality tax, and kind of overwhelmed you. I mean, this is a linear process where we knew a long time ago that we would be looking for alternate ways to fund this deficit at some point. But first we needed to get the facility built, and then we came back and asked for the extension of the half cent so we can pay on our bonds, and now we're looking for a way that we can spread the burden of operations of the facility to the region. It's a regional facility, and the burden should not be borne by 5,000 people in the city of Bemidji.
And the public discussion, you were up front with the public at the time that you, the city knew that this deficit was going to be occurring? Councilor Johnson?
Senator Scoia, yeah, we did multiple marketing studies. They all indicated they had best case, middle case, and worst case mm-hmm. scenarios, but all of the scenarios indicated some sort of deficit, and none of those studies really indicated any capital improvements dollars. You know, we always recognized that that's something that was going to come, maybe not in the first few years, but eventually there's going to need to be upkeep and that types of things to make the center current and up to date. And so that was always upfront with all of that. That was part of the hard discussion of selling the program in the first place, is letting them know how these things run. Because I think last year, 2012, it was a 14.5 economic impact to the community. And one of the things we're lacking, have been lacking, is conferences and conventions, partly because we needed to get on the list, but partly because we know that those are the things that can possibly not be as lucrative for event centers. Event centers make more money on events than they do conventions, but we want to do the conventions and conferences because it'll put more people in our hotel rooms and more people in our restaurants for multiple days.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, members? We have a couple of other folks that would like Senator Sengem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to any of the witnesses. I'll stand corrected, but I have some recollection that as we first went to Bemidji and looked at this project, it was associated a lot with Bemidji State Hockey, Bemidji State University Hockey, and their needs and for an upgraded facility. My question is, does the center have a contract or something like that with Bemidji State University, and to the best of your ability, are they paying far market value for their rentals and use of that facility?
Mr. Chatton?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sengem, that's a really good question. If it's fair market value, we've looked at that a couple of times as to what our actual cost is for just the BSU area that they are using, and the additional cost to heat the arena when you have ice in there for their use, and we are making money off of their being a tenant at the center. Is it fair market value? I don't know that there's any private sector type facility that you could compare it to determine what fair market value is. For us, fair market value is that BSU kept their hockey program instead of having to fold. BSU got into the WCHA instead of the conference that they were in that was going defunct. I mean, it has had so many social benefits well beyond any fair market value, though I do believe that we are getting a fair market value in rent. And we have a 20-year contract with BSU.
Mr. Chairman, not to dwell, but it's not an easy question to answer. I understand that. I was more thinking, you know, what does UMD play or pay for, you know, to Duluth Civic Center, St. Cloud. I guess they have their own, but it was more just the comparables and whether or not proportionally we're in the ballpark.
Mr. Chapman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we had at the table when we negotiated the lease, we had council representatives and BSU representatives, and then we had a representative from Convention Sports and Leisure, CSL, who did the marketing study for the event center and determine what our possible deficits would be. CSL deals with probably most of the facilities that you just mentioned. And so he brought to the table some of the comparative charges and how other places are doing it. And we felt that we were in the ballpark when we did our lease.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. And we'll bring Mr. Seert and Mr. DeSanto.
Why don't you stay? Counselors, take off.
And Mr. McElroy.
Chairman, if I could begin, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Lodging Association. I also knew the Minnesota Restaurant Association.
Mr. McElroy, could you pull the mic in front of you, please? Thank you.
Would you like me to start over, Mr. Chair?
I think it's fine.
All right. We have concerns about both the lodging tax and the restaurant tax. Two of our members are here, Rich Seeger representing the Hampton Inn, the new and about to be completed DoubleTree and the Green Mill, and Jake DeSanto with the Best Western. I'm going to ask them to speak principally about the food and beverage tax. Subdivision 2 of the bill is interesting because it would establish a new precedent. As Mr. Chatham indicated, two other communities have the authority to use a lodging tax for non-lodging promotion purposes. Those are Rochester and St. Paul. Those were grandfathered taxes in place prior to Minnesota Statute 469.190 being passed. 469 was seen as sort of the statewide standard to establish that lodging taxes should be used for tourism promotion and marketing. To the best of my knowledge, and your council can check this and make sure that my memory is correct and that I have checked with others, legislature has not authorized the use of a lodging tax for non-promotional purposes since 469.190 was passed. And we're very concerned about the precedent that, and I'm going to use the word diverting, and it's probably more fair to say the word using, these revenues for a non-promotional purpose, I believe, would make it very difficult for the legislature and the community to say to others in the future that they can't come, whether it's Owatonna or Worthington. Worthington is trying to build an event center and use these taxes that have been a very successful part of a partnership with Explore Minnesota Tourism and other private partners to promote Minnesota's tourism and hospitality industry, which you all know are an important part of our economy. So we would urge, as this moves forward, to carefully consider whether the council or whether the Senate and the legislature broadly is prepared to deal with a fundamental change to how we've used lodging taxes. My recollection is that 469.190, and perhaps council could help me from the history, was passed in the 80s. We have not broken with that precedent since then. And I know precedent isn't stand golden. There are times to change it. We're not convinced, particularly given that the restaurant tax, which is also controversial, very honestly, but would raise 80% of the revenue, that jeopardizing that precedent for 20% is the right thing to do. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take questions if there are some, or would like Rich Seeger, who is a real pioneer in lodging in northern Minnesota. The Hampton Inn, if you've stayed in it, is one of the finest facilities in the state. And Hilton has entrusted him to pioneer a new type of DoubleTree Inn for smaller markets, which will open a 92-room DoubleTree, where most of them are much larger, and with the extensive use of balconies and great public space over the lake, is a huge capital investment. And Rich and the rest of the industry have some concerns they'd like to share with you also, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy. And we will check on that, whether this would be establishing a precedent or not. Ms. Pollack's not here right now, but we certainly will check on that.
My memory is long, but not always perfect, Mr. Chair.
The memory's good. It's the recall that is the problem.
It's good. It's just short.
Mr. Seeger?
Senator, excuse me, Senators and Chairman, thank you for the time to listen to our testimony on this tax situation in Bemidji. I'm a little disappointed in the way this whole thing is being presented to the community and to your committee.
Mr. Seeger, could you state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Rich Seegert from Bemidji. And as Mr. McElroy states, I have the Hampton Inn, Green Mill, and DoubleTree Hotel under construction to open up this summer. And we do have some other properties in Bemidji. Basically here representing the hotel aspect of things and make some comments of what they are claiming. At this point in time, we find that they're not good studies and not good statistics. And there's not much support for this in Bemidji. They talk about support. The Chamber of Commerce came out against this. The VCB came out against this. Apparently, some of them say that they have changed their minds. I'm not sure about that. The Innkeepers Association represents about a dozen, 15 properties. They are against it. I have not spoken to any restaurant or bar operator that has been in favor of this particular tax. There's no consensus in Bemidji, and there's been no referendum to the taxpayers in Bemidji. There's only been broken promises by the city managers, by the mayor, and sorry to say about Tom Saxog, he fits in that category also, because last fall they said if there was no local support, this would not be initiated. And I have a letter here from Mr. Murray Williamson from Super 8. I'll present to you in a moment. That also testifies that same fact. He's written it out to the city. And I'm a little disappointed in the way things are presented. I think things should be worked out better with the community and the business people before they take off an initiative and gain the support of the people in the town. Going on further with some of this, the taxes, I've heard numbers all over the place about taxes in Bemidji. At one time, the city told me 65% to 75% of the tax would be generated by restaurants and bars, and now today I hear you saying 80%, 20% from hotels. Just to put it a little bit more in perspective, I cannot trace more than 5% of our sales in the hotel coming from the Sanford Center. Mr. Williamson here, his letter here, he's tracing less than 3%. And Mr. DeSanto can make his own testimony about what he finds in his property. We just don't feel as though this is a fair tax. We don't think this is being dealt with properly. If this tax is passed, the bar and restaurants are going to pay a lot of it. There's 5,000 students in Bemidji. There's 3,000 students in the middle school and the high school. Those people spend a lot of money in restaurants and bars, not so much in the middle school or high school, but as college does. They're screaming about high costs, and now they want to raise the price for all this food and entertainment in Bemidji for college students. I don't think that's right. They're taxing the wrong people. Moving on, let's talk a little bit about the tax situation, other taxes. Bemidji just passed a franchise tax, increased to 28%, and is generating another $200,000 this year in taxes that was not there before. There's a 0.5% sales tax that generates $1.6 million. And as Mr. Chatton said, that will be transferred over to Sanford Center this year. There's a 3% lodging tax. Property taxes have gone up 8% on the city level. Mine went up 11.7%. And I think they seem to continue going also. The liquor stores in Bemidji generates $500,000 to $600,000 profit. That's a good fit for some of the shortfalls at the Sanford Center in case of emergency. I don't see any reason why we need new taxes there. And the center, as they say, is doing well, better than what they expected, with better operations and a little bit more tuning over there and better promotions on events. That place is going to break even. We think it's a wonderful facility. It's a great asset for Bemidji, and we really feel as though that thing's going to cash flow and do well, and we don't see any reason for additional taxes. The taxing our guests at our hotel, I just think, is wrong because they do not use that Sanford Center for the most part, and they should not have to pay for that.
And Mr. Siegert, your testimony is in opposition to both the food and beverage and the lodging tax.
Yes.
Great, thank you.
The 1% tax.
Yep. Mr. DeSanto.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I own the Best Western in Bemidji. I've had it for 7 years. I'm there every day answering the phones, talking to customers. And I'm telling you, since October of 2010, since this place opened, there's not much new business coming into town from this event center. Maybe 2 to 3% additional business. It's not there. So I feel an increase in taxes is just the wrong way to pay for it.
Okay, thank you. Senator Rest, did you?
No, I changed my mind.
Okay, thank you. Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair, folks, do you know, was the center built with bonding money? State bonding money?
Senator Saxog, yes. Yes, I believe yes. It was.
And can you say how much state bonding money went into the event center?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Artman, it was $3 million in planning money, $20 million in bonding for construction.
There's also local bonds.
Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair, that is my concern, is that we've brought state money in to build a municipal event center that hasn't really delivered on the results, which is what we're hearing here. And now you're asking the local community to come up with tax dollars from local businesses to support a state-bonded convention center. I think that is a misplaced effort, in my view. I'd like to know one other question, if any of you know. Do any of you know what the current unemployment rate is in the city of Bemidji?
Well, the testifiers that would know that are no longer at the table. We can bring them back.
That'd be great if
they
do.
We did have a pretty good discussion about that this would be a substitution for current property taxes. So the locals are paying for it. It's whether they can export some of the costs to the visitors to Bemidji. But,
Mr. Chair, respectfully, I did hear that. I just didn't hear anybody say what the current unemployment rate is in the community, and I'm concerned that will go up if these businesses can't continue to draw customers to their hotels and restaurants and bars. I'm concerned that those facilities will shut down like we've seen in some other communities and leave more people unemployed. And so I think it's an important fact. And so maybe one of the testifiers, one of the city council members, could maybe answer the question.
Senator Saxog, do you think any of your testifiers would have an answer? Maybe we can get that to you, Senator Artman.
Sure. Let's see if Mr. Chatton can.
Welcome back, Mr. Chatton.
Chairman, Senators, I don't know the exact number. It's over 10%, and I can tell you that Bemidji and Brainerd often swap back and forth for the highest unemployment in the state.
Right.
As pertains to the bonding money, we did get a total of $23 million in bonding money for an $80 million project. So the state does have a considerable investment in there, and the state also approved a half-cent sales tax, which helps us to pay off $44 million in bonds. So the city actually came up with $13 million in other resources for the center. Did I answer all your questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just find it frustrating that if the local sales tax was intended to help fund the balance due and owing on the convention center, and we contributed our bonding money to make sure that was accomplished, now you're back for a different fix that the community wasn't involved and engaged in when you promoted the bonding project. And so I'm not supportive. There may be others here that are, but you haven't convinced me that we should provide another solution for funding the same project.
Senator, or Mr. Chatton.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, again, I would just say, which I had commented before, that with 51% of our properties in the city tax exempt, we have 5,100 parcels in the city that are paying the entire subsidy for not a city or municipal event center. This is a regional event center. That's why the state was kind enough to give us bonding money. And as such, we're trying to find a way to tap more regional resources to cover the deficit. And both the hotels and the restaurants speak to a more regional audience.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, that was known at the time that you presented the bonding proposal, and that was why it was seen as a regional proposal.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Artman, before you came in, we did have some pretty good testimony. One, I think some of it, the best on how these things are done was by Senator Reinert discussing Duluth. Maybe he'd like to just say a couple of words and fill in Senator Artman on the way these things are done, so to speak.
Mr. Chair, I think I have Senator a good familiarity with the way these things are done. I don't need to hear from Senator Reinert. Thank you, Senator Saxhawk.
Any closing comments, Senator Saxhawk?
Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate it if Senate File 701, this bill would be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
I see Mr. Botsek is at the table. Mr. Botsek, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just want to go on the record, too, Mr. Chairman, if I could. Gary Botsek for the Convention and Visitors Bureau, State Association, of which Visit Bemidji is one of our strong members. In fact, poor Donnell Hilliard, who is executive director for Visit Bemidji, is not here today because he's busy promoting Bemidji, is also president of our state chapter. And we oppose the lodging tax subdivision in this bill for many of the reasons you heard earlier. She's caught between a rock and a hard place, obviously. She's busy promoting her city, including Sanford Center, which is a very important ingredient of their efforts. But they're promoting it through marketing the city, the hockey team in season, et cetera, everything that Bemidji stands for, and it stands for a lot. Just like the ones in St. Paul do, and we've got convention centers, over 50 of them in Minnesota, and most of them. Your cities are represented by Convention and Visitors Bureaus. Egan, St. Louis Park's got a brand new one. Burnsville, all over, St. Cloud, and led by Duluth, a terrific partnership. And that's what we intend to be, partners with the city, partners with the private sector to draw people in, produce the revenue to help these projects get stay open. We don't want that center to close. That would be a tragedy for Bemidji and a tragedy for Minnesota. But let's let the lodging tax, as Dan McElroy pointed out, has got a very important role to play. It's drawing money into the cities. To add another cent on or up to a cent cannot be used for promotion. If you want to raise the lodging tax, one of my members suggested, let them use it for promotion. Promote the Sanford Center with that extra penny. You know, do it that way rather than pay for bonds or pay for operation and maintenance. That's crossing the line that McElroy talked about. It. We agree with that 100%. Let them do their job. Let them promote tourism. Let them draw the people in. Let's get them to leave their money at the restaurants and the bars and the hotels, and that makes money and that make for the entire city and helps the economy of Minnesota as well. So we just have trouble with that Subdivision 2 lodging tax, Mr. Chairman, would answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Botsek. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate File 701? Any other questions, members?
Senator, I'd like to make a couple more short comments.
Very briefly.
Okay,
Mr.
briefly.
Seeger.
It has to do with the real estate property in Bemidji. The Chatton is talking about a 50-51% tax base in that town. There's lots of real estate parcels that the city can be selling, for one thing. Secondly, Northern Township and Bemidji Township is being annexed, and those ratios are going to change in the next 2 or 3 years when it comes to property taxes in that town. One other comment about their editorial in the paper. There's been editorials in the Bemidji paper against this tax also. So the one yesterday, yeah, that was in favor of it. Bear in mind, nobody has signed that. Nobody has. We don't know who signed, put that in the paper. It was not endorsed by anybody.
Thank you, Mr. Seeger. Thank you, Senator Saxhawk. Chair will lay over Senate file.
Mr. Chair, I was going to actually make a motion, if I could, to lay the bill on the table.
Senator Artman.
I would make a motion to lay the bill on the table at this time. I don't think that it should go forward without the support.
Senator
Armand,
it's going to be laid on the table for possible inclusion anyway,
right?
But if you would like
Mr. Chair, I am trying to make a point that this bill doesn't have the support to include it in an omnibus bill.
Well,
and
then
I
just lay it over, period.
Well,
we're just going to lay the bill over, and we will have the chance to vote on it if we're going to try to include it, Senator Armand.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's fine, but the folks are here today. I'm not sure that they'll be back in order to hear our decision on it when it comes back again. I think folks have traveled a long way to hear what we have to say about this bill, and I think that they should be heard, and we should be heard as well, and I'd like to move to lay the bill on the table.
Senator Ortman moves to lay Senate File 701 as amended on the table for possible inclusion in the Senate.
Mr. Chair, that's not my motion.
Senator Ortman moves to lay Senate File 701 as amended on the table. Any discussion, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
No.
Senator Ortman's motion does not prevail. The bill is not laid on the table.
Now you can lay it on the table.
Chair lays over Senate File 701 as amended for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Senjum.
You guys should do the right thing and just while they were
Senator Senjum, Senate File 1406, Rochester.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1406 is a bill that we're bringing back from veto land, if you will. Last year, it was in the one of the tax bills that did not prevail. It's a lodging tax. For the city of Rochester, actually an extension of an existing lodging tax from 3% to 7%, 4% to 7% involves bricks and mortars for the proposed expansion to the Mayo Civic Center, if and when that is approved by the legislature, and so it provides a mechanism, if you will, for managing the local share. I think I'll maybe just stop there in the essence of time and turn it over to my testifiers. We've got, I'm not sure, the Mayor Ardell Brady. Maybe, Mayor, do you want to start out?
I'll start. Thank you, Senator.
Mayor Brady.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. It's good to be here. I'm Ardell Brady, Mayor of the City of Rochester. This is my 11th year as mayor. This project, a little history of this project and the request has been around since 2007 that we first were asking. The bonding request was made in 2008. That was a request for construction. And at that time, we received $3.5 million in design money. The first quarter of 2010, plans were done, and it was approved by the legislature. Then was vetoed by the governor, along with plans for Mankato and St. Cloud convention centers. Last year, this was passed, as Senator said, by both the House and Senate, and then got delayed at that point. 90% of the project costs will add 188,000 square feet of convention center space, ballroom, meeting rooms, not entertainment and sports. This is Mayo Medical-related convention space and will improve the regional and state economy. Mayo Convention Center is supported by our businesses, the Chamber, Rochester Convention Visitors Bureau, Mayo Clinic, and labor. The estimated cost now is about $82 million. The state request that we're requesting is $37 million, and so $45 million would be made up by the city. We're asking to repeal what's on the books now, the food and beverage 1% tax and the 1% lodging, and increase that, as the senator said, 3% to bring it up to 7%. This predates the DMC and is complementary to that particular project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Introduce Mr. Brad Jones, Executive Director, President, high-ranking official in the Convention Visitors Bureau in Rochester.
Mr. Jones.
Good morning, Chair and Committee. You have a couple of flyers in your packet, and I wanted to explain a little bit. This project is extremely important for shoring up or for diversifying our business base, and it's designed to take advantage of our global position in the economy. Once finished, this project will bring incremental business to our businesses who operate on a very unique model. We operate on a Sunday through Thursday business model, and so we have to bring incremental business to the city to make all those businesses necessary to serve that population viable on a 7-day-a-week business cycle. So the project has been discussed for many years. It's extremely important, and we have a wide varying support. We've talked about the funding model, and we've went back to the table since 2007. We think this is a better a model to use. In your packet, you'll see all the groups that we've talked to and that are interested in bringing business to the state of Minnesota and to Rochester. You'll see lost business, and you'll see new business prospects. This is a business case that we've thought long and hard about, and you can see that we've said no to about $85 million worth of business not coming to the state of Minnesota because we don't have this facility in place today. That's a very telling number. That's business, and those are workers that are not working a 7-day week today that could be. So I know we're talking about the funding model. We have information on the project. We have information on our support for the funding model. So I would yield to any questions that you may have about both the project and the funding model.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just to reference your document that you have, you may not have the one that Mr. Jones was looking at. That was more for the Civic Center itself, but there are letters of support here from the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce, from Convention Visitors Bureau, and also from lead administration.
Thank you.
And now I'd like to introduce Mr. Greg Andrist. Greg represents Building Trades in southeastern Minnesota.
Yep. Good morning.
Mr. Andrist.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, committee. I am Greg Andrist. I do represent the Southeast Minnesota Building and Construction Trades. Roughly 2,600 members in southeastern Minnesota. You're familiar with what's going on with the construction industry. We've hit high unemployment over the years, starting to creep out of it. This project, on behalf of the 2,600 members, we are in favor of this. We need to get our members back to work. We're looking at roughly, we're estimating about 1 million man hours on this particular project. Some will be on site. Keep in mind some of this work is being done off site as far as fabrication for the building itself. Because of the size of the project, looks like about a 2-year project in our eyes. Should create roughly 720 additional construction jobs for our workers. As a construction industry representing these members, we are very much in favor of getting our members back to work. These are good paying jobs. They make good money. They're paying into their pensions, health insurance. So we're really in support of this.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Anything else, Senator Nelson? Senator Nelson.
Oh, I'll hold my questions till all the testifiers are done.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, I've
Senator Sanjum,
Executive President of the Minnesota, pardon me, the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce, John Wade.
Mr. Wade.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I won't restate everything that has already been said to support this project. I will say this, and it does reference what Mr. Jones talked a little bit about. We have a very unique hospitality model. If we are successful with a Destination Medical Center initiative, that will add even more value or increase the value proposition of this expansion. See, we have a model where healthcare is becoming more efficient and effective, and the delivery of healthcare is more efficient and effective. We also have thousands of hotel rooms to keep full. And as we add more patients and visitors to Rochester, we need more hotel rooms. The challenge we have is the delivery is becoming more efficient, and we need to be able to continue to fill those rooms with other business. I believe, Mr. Chair, members, that while this project made a tremendous amount of sense a few years ago, it makes even more today. We're talking about adding millions of additional people visiting that community, that special place in this state. And if we're successful at that, the value proposition for this expansion is far greater than we ever thought. And it's not just moving business, convention business around the state. We're really not interested in doing that, just taking it from one to the other to the other. I don't know that that necessarily adds a lot of value to the state of Minnesota. What we do have the opportunity, like we've never had before, is to attract medically related meetings that are held throughout the world today to Minnesota. And that will benefit all of us. This project makes sense. We believe that it is fiscally responsible, and we believe it will become a great asset, not just to our community, but to the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. And, Mr. Mayor, just so I'm clear, none of this tax has been imposed yet. This is prospective now, or can you help me with that?
Correct.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Senator Sanjum.
Mr. Chair, there is an, just maybe clarify confusion because I was stumbling a little bit, but there is a 4% food and beverage, or pardon me, a 4% lodging tax in Rochester right now. There is a food and beverage tax which has is on the books but has never been implemented.
That's great.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nelson and then Senator Rest.
Thank you, Chair Skoy. Thank you for the presentation. I have one comment and then a question. One has to do with the fact that this bill is actually repealing that food and beverage tax and instead substituting a lodging tax. And, you know, that was an element that was very troubling to me from the get-go, that we would be asking everyone who consumes food or beverages within our city to pay that food and beverage tax. This appears to be a much more accurate placement for that tax, which is on the lodging industry, which certainly benefits from the increase in the convention center business. So I applaud that piece of the bill. Now, I have a question, certainly something that's on all of our minds, and certainly up here, anyone that's from Rochester, we continually get asked very thankfully about Destination Medical Center. Certainly one of the biggest ticket items that is coming through the legislature and has the potential to impact our state economy in a way that we've never seen, you know, $5 billion of private investment. So we all want to see that happen. We're glad for the good bipartisan support it's had. And to your comments, Mr. Wade, I'd like to know if by some terrible fate, Destination Medical Center does not happen. I think it will be tragic for our state. But if that were not to happen, how does that impact this Mayo Civic Center expansion? How would that?
Well, thank you.
Mr. Wade.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, we believe that if for some reason, for some terribly unfortunate reason, if this legislature were not to pass the Destination Medical Center initiative, that the project would stand on its own. My point was to say that if in the legislature's wisdom that Destination Medical Center, the greatest economic opportunity the state has seen in a generation, is able to move forward, that will add additional value to this investment. And we also share your point related to the lodging tax. And we looked at our primary competitors as we reviewed that lodging tax. And where are those competitors? They are in Baltimore and Cleveland and Houston as we looked at the elasticity that in that lodging tax and looked at that versus a food and beverage tax, which we ultimately felt was not the appropriate place for this. But your point is it's a very good point. If for some reason this legislature, and I mean this with all due respect, stumbles on DMC, it would have obviously a detrimental impact on our community. There is, and this state. There's no doubt about that. Be huge. But this center was designed before, this expansion of the Mayo Civic Center was designed before Destination Medical Center came to be known to many. So it was designed as a standalone project. It's only to say that if Destination Medical Center is embraced by this legislature, that then it will add even more value to the property and to the project.
Thank you.
Senator Senjum, this is not related to the medical center, though. This is the convention center that we're discussing today.
Correct.
Anything else, members? Senator Rest.
Thank you. reflecting on the testimony about the Bemidji proposal, it seems to me that one of the arguments they were making is that the lodging tax is exported because it's a regional thing, and the food and beverage tax is not because a lot of the locals use it. And it seems to me that this is, you can make the same observation about here, moving away from the food and beverage tax to the lodging tax. That's just an observation. But I'm wondering, what is the bonding request for the convention center this year?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum.
Mr. Senator Skoy and Senator Rest, I believe it's at $37 million.
That's correct.
And, Mr. Senator Chairman, Rest. Has that gone up?
It has gone up, Madam Senator Chair, Senator, Senator Skoy, Representative Rest, or pardon me, Senator Rest, it's gone up from 34 to 37.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, or maybe Mayor Breedy can answer this for me. I seem to recall that we had this Rochester Event Center in the 2010 bonding bill, and Governor Plenty then vetoed it. Can somebody refresh my memory as to, and we could have obviously done it cheaper then we're going to be able to do it now if we're going to do it. Can anybody refresh my memory as to what was in Governor Plenty's veto message, why he didn't think it was a viable project?
Senator Senjum, do you have any recollection of that?
Senator Skoy, Senator Bach, I don't specifically recall. What I want to say, and I'll stand corrected, is that there was more than one convention center in that bill, and he may have just decided it wasn't a year for convention centers, but I will totally stand corrected on that.
Senator Arvin.
Wasn't this bill included in the 2012 bill that got vetoed?
This bill was. Not the bonding.
Chair, Senator Ortman, yes, it was.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that the difference is the convention centers were specifically line item vetoed in 2010.
That's correct.
And for some reason, last year we didn't make the cut, but I think it would be unfair to say that in the context of a larger budget discussion, it was much different than a line item veto. But I do have a question of the mayor. Mr. Mayor, if the legislature doesn't make this change, will the city go ahead and impose the food and beverage tax, or will they just let the project go?
Probably the latter.
Mr. Mayor?
Excuse me. Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I think the latter. I think we won't have the money to do it.
You wouldn't impose the food and beverage tax to raise the money to do it?
I don't think we would.
Wow. Well,
Mr. Chairman, why did you ask for it in the first place?
Well, we did, and then maybe Mr. Wade can speak to this. From the community standpoint, the view was we'd rather go the lodging tax rather than the food and beverage. We could impose that, but I don't believe that would be the wishes of the community.
Mr. Wade.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we looked very carefully at this issue related to our community, and it was felt at the time, and it was the decision of the Common Council, not any of ours, to pursue the lodging tax, which we believed was a more fair way as that change was made. Initially, there was conversation about a food and beverage tax. We understand that. It was decided that that was not the best way to fund this in the community, and that we made the move to the lodging tax. Mr. Newman is here, the assistant city administrator. He never forgets anything. So I may stand corrected, but that is My recollection of that, that the lodging tax, we were looking at this from a competitive standpoint nationally and the impact it would have locally, and felt that the lodging tax made the most amount of sense for our community.
If I could also Mr. clarify, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I think it's very important. This project has been lumped with other regional event centers for years, and this is much different. This is a convention center. It's not a place where hockey and basketball and concerts would happen. It's a convention center. It's meant for a very specific purpose. Those people stay in hotel rooms. Unlike the Bemidji model that you heard earlier, there's a great percentage of these people that use this facility that stay in hotel rooms, over 85% to 90%. When they're coming for a convention that is of national and international stature, they travel from around the globe to come to these events. Therefore, this method of taxation makes a lot more sense than a food and beverage tax where the locals would pay 50% or more of it. That's why our hotels are very supportive of this. They understand the model, and they've advanced this with the Common Council.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, my friends from Rochester, I wouldn't presume too much about residents of the city being against a food and beverage tax if they can get a new state-of-the-art convention center. I mean, Senator Reinert and I went through that in Duluth with the recent expansion of the deck up there. And Governor Plenty at the time, even though no referendum was required in law, asked the city of Duluth to go out and hold a referendum before coming to the legislature to impose an additional, I believe, 0.75% sales tax on food and beverage. And if I remember right, and Senator Reinert probably has the number, it passed by over 60% of the voters in the city of Duluth. Because they realized they had to figure out how to fund their local portion of their convention center. And I think people in the city of Duluth stepped up and said, we have to participate if we're going to have this nice facility in our community. So I just would encourage you to not underestimate. I think you've got a great project, and I think local people will understand that they need to participate in paying for it.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I guess maybe it's a point of information on my part, which I have no right to ask you, but is that, I'm trying to understand, is there an opposition to the lodging tax that has been proposed? I'm trying to get a sense of that here.
Mr. Wade, we're going to bring up a couple testifiers.
Thank you.
In just a minute. Senator Nelson.
Just a couple comments. You know, one of the things we do in the legislature is we listen to our constituents, at least we should. And it was very clear on the home front that, and certainly I think understandable, there's a much closer nexus between convention center use and a lodging tax than there is between convention centers and a food and beverage tax. And so I would say this is an example, I believe, where leaders at home and leaders here have listened to their constituents. And as an aside, I do have Governor Plenty's veto letter up here, a great thing about this technology. Two things. One, he was concerned that the total bonding bill exceeded the budgeted line item for bonding, and secondly, that other priorities were not funded, like veterans, military, had been slashed by 50% or 40%. So I'm not sure the relevance here, but we do have that available if anybody wants that. But I think it's a nexus issue on the tax.
And Mr. Jones and Mr. Wade, maybe if you guys could step back. Mr. Botsick and Mr. McElroy testified in opposition to the Bemidji lodging tax. Curious what their position would be on the Rochester lodging tax.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Lodging Association and the Minnesota Restaurant Association. My great concern about the Bemidji tax is that it strikes new ground under what we've always referred to or have for the last, coming up on 30 years, called the statewide lodging tax, the one authorized under 469.190. Rochester is one of five communities that had grandfathered authority prior to the passage of the statewide lodging tax. My recollection from memory are that those were Rochester,
St. Paul, St. Cloud, Duluth, and I believe Minneapolis. I'm not going to give an opinion on increasing the amount, but it is less problematic to us because of their current grandfathered status. You can make the judgment as to whether it being a convention center rather than an event center for local activities, or whether conjunction with the Destination Medical Center proposal make it different. We think its grandfathered status does make it different.
Thank you. Mr. Botzik?
Gary Botzik for the Convention and Visitors Bureaus. Ditto. That says it all. It's a grandfather scenario versus the rest. And it does show you the difference. If the horse is out of the barn on these situations, and we can live with that. But if we let Bemidji, the next year you're going to have 10 more. You're going to open up that dedicated lodging for promotion theory or theme to anything that's underperforming. And that was not the intent. The intent was to draw people to your fair community and then capture that money through the restaurants, through the bars, through the hotels, the motels, gas stations, etc. Keep that money locally, drive it back through for jobs. But we support this. Mr. Jones is a very strong leader in our statewide convention and Visitors Bureau and past president, etc. And so a lot of respect for the work he does. And, again, the partnering that's occurring in Rochester. So we have no trouble with this, Mr. Chairman, from the state convention and Visitors Bureaus.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, members? Anybody else wish to testify in opposition or support of Senate File 1406? Thank you, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, members. Senator Skoy, appreciate the opportunity.
We will lay over Senate File 1406 for possible inclusion. Senator Bach. Senator Bach. Senator Bach, you have two bills. Which one would you like to start with?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's start with Senate File 795 because I have a technical amendment, so I'd like to move the A1 technical amendment.
Senator Bach moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, my good friends, the mayor and city councilor from Proctor, can speak much more in depth about this than I can. But on the local sales tax issue as it relates to Proctor. Proctor, for those of you that don't know, is a suburban community around Duluth. We have Proctor, Hermantown, and then some townships. And in both the city of Duluth and the city of Hermantown, they have a 1% local option sales tax. Proctor has a 0.5%. It's always been a little bit of a sore spot among people in Proctor. When they go to Hermantown or they go to Duluth, they have to pay 1%. But when people from Hermantown or Duluth come to Proctor, to their lumberyard or wherever they go to buy something, they're treated differently. But the city has some strong needs we've given them bonding authority. They currently have the 0.5%. So I'd like whichever one would like to speak first to speak to the reason for the additional request.
Mr. Rowan?
Rowander? Benson.
Oh, Mr. Benson.
Mr. Chair, members, I am Jake Benson. I'm on the Proctor City Council. I own three businesses in Proctor. I'm a former Chamber of Commerce president and a former mayor of Proctor. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important bill, which has been endorsed by the Chamber of Commerce, our Economic Development Authority, our school district, and our newspaper, the Proctor Journal. As Senator Bach said, we're near Duluth. Proctor's slightly larger than 3 square miles. We have slightly more people than 3,000. And we're bisected by I-35 and Highway 2. And yes, we're bordered on 3 sides by 2 cities that have a 1% sales tax. Proctor was created to serve the mining industry, and at one time we were the largest iron ore sorting facility in the world. Almost 29% of all the developed land in Proctor is owned by the Canadian National Railway, but yet because of Minnesota statutes, they don't get to pay any taxes. They pay in lieu of taxes, but that creates an interesting hardship on our citizens. And that's Minnesota Statute 270.81. It's going to cost Proctor up to like $250,000 to create a quiet zone because the railroad neglected to block one of their cars that rolled through the crossing and hit a vehicle that was going through the crossing in the center of town. And if you love railroads, you love the sound of whistles, but if you're working and you have to wake up in the morning and you have to listen to that sound of that train whistle 3-4 times a night, it's tiring. Most recently, we lost our canine officer, our animal control officer, our canine officer, our animal control officer, our school resource officer, a park worker, our some office staff. Our infrastructure and services are strained. Our city administrator is with me today. A lifelong Proctor resident with an MBA and the former mayor is working for $15,000 a year to help our city. This bill is important to us, and it's going to keep us on equal footing with our 2 neighboring cities, and this has no fiscal impact to the state. And hopefully we'll be able to pay off our bonds quicker with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Mr. Rowender?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'd just like to make this simple. The city is in hard times right now. Costs have been going up over the past few years. Local government aid has been going down. We've done everything we can, as you heard Councilor Benson talk about. We've reduced our staff. We've done everything we can to get our forces down so that we can continue to provide the services to our citizens that they require without raising property taxes. And we've been pretty successful at that up to this point. Over the last 2 years, we've only raised our property tax levy by total of 2%, but we're to the point right now where we're running out of options. We've had to let some of our infrastructure work go. We're looking to come to you to get some help as to how we can raise a little bit more revenue so that we can continue to maintain our infrastructure, provide all the services we need, and yet not have to raise property taxes for our citizens.
Thank you. Senator Bach, or maybe Mr. Rowender, could you tell me what the purpose of Section 2 is, where you're notwithstanding the time limits? Is this some kind of retroactivity, or you know what's going on there, Mr.
Chairman? I can explain that to you. What happened is we had two authorities passed in 2008 and 2010. In 2010, we actually held a referendum with the city, and it passed unanimously by a 6-1 margin. But for some reason, we never filed the paperwork with the Secretary of State. There's a form that you have to send it to the Secretary of State saying you're accepting the bill and that it passed. And for some reason, that got overlooked in those 2 years.
So is that separate from the additional 0.5%? That's the provision that needs to happen to, you know, in order for you to implement what?
I believe it was the additional bond sale. Is it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, yes, that's correct. It's the additional bond sale that was authorized in 2008 and the 2010 special legislation.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Anything else? Anybody else who would like to testify in opposition or support of Senate File 795?
Mr. Chair, Senators, one little footnote on this. Vote first came about. The Proctor Citizens supported it by 11-to-1 margin. A few years later, when we were going to extend it, it was a 6-to-1. So our citizens get it, and they support this.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Chair will lay over 795 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Senator Vox, 794.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 794 is requesting the authority to impose a food and beverage and entertainment tax up to 1%. Proctor currently does not have one. Duluth there again has a 2.25, I think, Senator Reiner. This would allow them to provide some services to the city that currently the entire burden falls on the property tax and be very helpful to the city.
Mr. Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. Proctor for the past 40 years has been entrance to the Duluth Spirit Mountain Recreation Area. 80 acres of Spirit Mountain, the most valuable property in Proctor, is owned by the city of Duluth and pays no property taxes, yet we have to provide the services. Proctor for the past 92 years has been the entrance to the South St. Louis County Fair. An estimated 76,650 rooms are booked every year in Proctor in one of our three motels, with about 115,000 visitors who spend the night. They go to our equine facilities, our half-mile racetrack, our regional recreation center, our gun club, golf course, and, of course, Lake Superior in Duluth. They go to our events that begin in Proctor, like the Blizzard ALS fundraiser, which is the largest snowmobile fundraiser of its type in the United States. This year alone, it raised $850,000. We're the home of the MS-150, which is Minnesota's longest and largest bicycle fundraiser, and the Amsoil Snowcross snowmobile race that brings 35,000 people to town. If 794 is passed and you are staying in Proctor instead of Duluth, you'd be saving over 3% on your bill. It's not going to raise a lot of money, but for us, it's a big amount. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rowander?
It's Rowander, yes.
Rowander?
Mr. Chairman, members, I've already explained to you why we need some additional funds. I'd just like to make a point of the fact that the sales tax half percent that we're looking for, that money would go to the infrastructure for our City Hall Community Center and on streets and sidewalks. The money we're asking for in the food and beverage tax would go to maintain the other facilities that we have. We own a regional recreation center with ball fields. We have a municipal golf course. And as Mr. Benson said, just within the last year, we acquired the South St. Louis County Fairgrounds. All of those facilities are in need of things. The ball field needs some new efficient lighting. The stands need to be fixed up. Golf course, we have not put any money into the golf course as a city over the last 5 years. The only changes that we've made there have been through a very generous member of the golf course that has donated funds to do some projects up there. In the fairgrounds itself, we'd like to do more to promote the fairgrounds and bring more activities there. And as we said, this food and beverage tax wouldn't generate a lot of funds for us, but anything that we can get will be something more than we have to go to the citizens for. We only have four restaurants in our community and six liquor establishments. So if we got more than $25,000 or $30,000 a year to this, I'd be surprised. But right now, we're not putting $25,000 or $30,000 into our other facilities, and this would really help us a lot with that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Proctor is an old community with old infrastructure and needs, the kind of community that the local government aid formula was intended to serve. The community was incorporated in 1894. And a lot of old, low-valued homes, and they are being significantly impacted by the recent cuts in local government aid. And that's why they're here. And that's why you see such tremendous support from the community for doing something like this, because of the tax rates that happen when all you have is old, low-valued real estate. You have to have awful high tax rates in order to generate any money from the property tax. So if we were the state was living up to the commitment I think that it should have made to local government aid cities like Proctor, wouldn't be here looking for help, because that's really the formula that was intended to help them. But unfortunately, we haven't had the resources to be able to continue to do that.
Any other questions, members? Anybody wish to testify in support or opposition of Senate File 794?
Senator, members.
Mr. Benson.
Thank you. There was a number of people that would have liked to have attended today. They could not, but they did send letters of support, and I believe there was enough copies for the committee.
Okay, thank you. Seeing nothing else, thank you, Senator Bach. Chair will lay over Senate File 794 for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next bill on the agenda is Senator Skoy's bill, Senate File 528, and there is an A1 amendment. Maybe when he's as he's coming to the table, that could be distributed. It's in the it's in the packets. Okay. Yeah. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
we'll adopt the amendment.
Yes, I do have the A1 amendment. And
Senator Skoy moves the A1 amendment. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 528 as amended before. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And the A1 amendment was an effort to make sure that this bill doesn't impact any of the other cities' LGA payments. It's an addition to the LGA as opposed to inclusion in the current formula. I'm here with Senate File number 528, which is an effort to assist the county, city, and school district in Manoman County and the city of Manoman, Manoman School District. The county of Manoman is wholly included within the White Earth Indian Reservation, as a lot of land that is not included on the tax roll. Back in the mid-2000s, the Shooting Star Casino was removed from the tax rolls, significantly impacting the property tax ability to raise property taxes in the area. We did at that time recognize the needs of the community and did implement a county program aid increase, LGA increase, and a school aid increase for these three local units. There was no inflator put on those dollars, and over time, obviously, the amount of the services that those dollars will buy has been diminished. As I looked at this effort that I'm bringing forward today, originally in my proposal, I was just going to add an inflator to those three dollars going back to, I think it was 2005 when it was first implemented. I had a long discussion with staff and others that have been around here and worked on those programs over the years, and I was discouraged from putting an inflator on the county program aid component. There are none of those in existence, and they discouraged me from starting that trend in the fear that it would snowball and get out of control. So that's hence the effort here to increase the amount of money by a factor of two for these jurisdictions. And I'm here with representatives from the county and the city, and they can add some additional testimony to the discussion.
Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself for the record, whoever would like to begin, please do so.
I'm David Gary, Manoma County Commissioner and current chair.
Commissioner.
We are here in support of this bill. It is, like Senator Skoy has said, very tough in that community with a large portion of our property not being able to be taxed. And when the casino did go off, it was a hard hit. And that's about all I got to say right now. And Karen Ahman, I'll let her take it.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having us here. My name is Karen Ahman. I'm also a county board member. I'd like to just give you a little bit of information about Manoman County. We're up in northwestern Minnesota. We're a small county, approximately 5,400 people. We are, as Senator Skoy had mentioned, completely within the boundaries of the White Earth Indian Reservation, which in itself has its challenges to have two governing bodies or two governments within one one area. We really would appreciate your support as we're finding as the tribal government gains more of their sovereignty and is really working very hard to be more independent. It has been affecting Menominee County in a lot of ways, and more specifically in our tax base. And so we would appreciate this consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Sir? Anyone else? Could you identify Rest, yourself, please?
Senator Rest, members, my name is Jeff Cadwell. I'm the city administrator for the city of Menominee. The casino in 2005, when these conversations began, was 54% of the tax base for the city of Menominee. And that number is probably higher now, because since then, the values of the homes in the city have devalued. The tax levy in the city has been held. The city council has been very conservative with funds. The levy has been held for the last 4 years, but the tax rate has increased from 39% to 50% because of the devaluation of homes. Since 2008, Senator Skoy has indicated that money doesn't buy the same things that it used to, specifically the cost of police services and the cost of prosecutions. Many of these dollars relate directly to having the casino in our community. And then there are other things that are not funded to the degree that we would like them to be funded or funded at all. That would be new equipment for the fire department, streets and lighting improvements, parks and cultural improvements, and economic development initiatives. So, again, the city does appreciate Senator Skoy's efforts in this behalf and appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Cadwell. Sir?
My name is Jim Cookman. I'm a fairly new commissioner, a little over a year in Menominee County. I'm currently vice chair. We appreciate this bill, and Menominee County really needs some extra help. One of my issues is that I've used some of the tax data from the League of Minnesota Cities showing Menominee County's tax rate, and I'm sure you folks all have this. Menominee County has historically had the highest tax rate in the state of Minnesota. Yet we're one of the poorest counties in the state. Unfortunately, you could drive just 4 miles to the west of the city of Menominee, which is my district, and enter Norman County, and the county tax rate there is half of our tax rate. That's not because we're wasteful at all. If any of you folks have been up to Menominee County, you can see we live quite sparingly. But we have high needs. We're high poverty, low income. We the county, have a high law enforcement budget and a high prosecution budget and a high social services levy. All of those are, unfortunately, a product of where we are encompassed in the reservation. I appreciate Senator Skoy's initiative here. This could produce some relief to our taxpayers that are paying an excessive amount for county taxes at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any questions for Senator Skoy or his testifiers? Is there anyone else who would like to testify either in support or in opposition? Senator Skoy, has this kind of these extraordinary circumstances with regard to LGA or county aid, we've done that in the past under special circumstances. So this isn't really a precedent. Is that a correct
Madam
observation?
Chair, I do not believe this is a precedent. In the past, there have been situations where we have given communities additional support when they need it. As you heard from the testifiers, the local effort is significant here. Their tax rate is high. They do have all the needs that the population brings, and they're doing what they can locally, but they do require some state support.
And Senator Skoy, would this this additional help will be ongoing, or is it just for a certain amount of time?
Madam Chair, my intent is for this to be ongoing.
Okay, just make sure we all understand that. Any other questions? Senator Skoy, final comment?
No, I appreciate the committee's consideration.
Okay, we have Senate File 528 before us as amended, and it will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator Skoy. Is there any other business?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I think there's no other business other than if you want to.
Well, tomorrow we are hearing a number of bills in the division, and next week we'll probably give you the calendar for the next 3 weeks, I guess. We'll be telling you when we're going to do what and so forth. And there being no further business, we stand adjourned.
Senator Thompson?